Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana's sports station. 1037 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't stenciled on your locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3. Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. LIVIN.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Okay.
Welcome to a Fast and Furious edition of the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. We're broadcasting live and direct from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's a Fast and Furious edition. We only got 1 hour, ladies and gentlemen. But if you want to call the ARCO Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111, feel free to do so. We'll be more than happy to take your call. We only got one guest today. That's Brady Amon, the Port Perry legend. We got old school wrestling talk on deck for 10:32. Going to be talking about our favorite wrestlers from the golden era / cartoon era that are not part of the Holy Trinity of Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, and Randy Macho Man Savage. So if you like old school wrestling, just keep it right here on the dial.
So no love for Harlem Heat, huh?
Oh, there it is.
Just saying. I don't know what the difference between Harlem Heat and Honky Tonk Man is, but maybe there's two of them. Maybe that's the difference.
Yeah, one's a tag team.
And one's the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time.
Wrestling 101.
I just wanted to shout out Harlem Heat because I don't know if that'll come up or not. It's going to be Fast and Furious, and if I'm going to derail the show, it's going to be at the beginning. You know this.
Yes.
So I just wanted to say shout out to Harlem Heat, and if you're over 18, now you screw it. If you're over 16, go Google search Harlem Heat Hulk Hogan. That's all I have to say.
That's all Cody Schutz is
going to say. It's worth the Google.
Thank you, Cody, as always.
NSFW, though. NSFW. It's worth the Google.
It's worth the Google. So we'll have some wrestling talk later on. We're also going to touch on both the Raging Cajun baseball team and the LSU Tigers. Got much-needed midweek games, victories last night.
Yesterday went better than Tuesday.
Yes, yesterday. Tuesday was watching the Cajuns and the Tigers lose to Southland teams.
Oh, you could say it was piss poor. You can just go ahead and say it. It was terrible.
Yesterday was a little bit better. LSU took care pretty easily. They were able to pull away and kind of rout Texas Southern out of the SWAC. The Cajuns, they had their hands full with Southern Miss, but won it in dramatic fashion. We'll touch on that as well. But we're going to lead the show off with the news coming out of New Orleans. Now, the narrative has been that they didn't have money to re-sign Mark Ingram. Now, just to recap, so Mark gets his deal. He signs with the Baltimore Ravens. They made it official yesterday. And that's a day after Latavius Murray has agreed to become a member of the New Orleans Saints. They got him for, correct me if I'm wrong here, Cody, 4 years for $14 million. I think that's what that contract is, the Murray deal, right?
I'll look it up. The years are right for sure. It's the
four dog. And 14, I do believe. And this is not a knock on him. Nothing personal by any stretch of the imagination. But four years for $14 million. He started off his career late round draft pick out of UCF with the Raiders. His whole entire rookie season was gone because he was on IR. And then he played for the Raiders for a couple years. And the last 2 years, he's been essentially the backup part of a rotation with the Minnesota Vikings. And the Saints go out and sign him because Mark Ingram's agent said, hey, he wanted $7 or $8 million per year. And the Saints said, we can't do that. We don't have the money to do that. And they went and signed Murray. Well, we talked a little bit about yesterday how that went over with the guys in the locker room. It didn't. Cam Jordan, pissed. Teron Armstead, pissed. Michael Thomas, upset. Justin Hardy, upset. Alvin Kamara, upset. Got a lot of guys upset that their boy, in a lot of regards, the heartbeat of this team. We talk about Drew Brees a lot, but any professional team has more than one guy that's the leader. And one more, you know, Drew may be the leader of the team, but in a lot of ways, the heart of the New Orleans Saints has been Mark Ingram. Fan favorite and a big locker room guy, a big leader, and the heartbeat of this team. And you could see it on social media from the Saints guys, the actual players. They're not happy. But this narrative was, well, look, this is the harsh reality of free agency. The agent's job is supposed to get his client the most money. That's the agent's job. Any agent, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, lacrosse, it doesn't matter. The agent's job is to get his or her client maximum amount of money because these athletes cannot play forever. The franchise sticks around forever, but the player has a very short time period that they can maximize their potential. So you're like, well, Mark Ingram's just going to be a casualty of the Saints' salary cap situation. They were only $9 million under the cap, and they had other needs. They got to beef up the defensive line. They got issues there. Or they let Alex Okafor walk. They need depth. They got guys facing suspension. They got rankings coming off in injury. What are they going to do at wide receiver? They have some question marks there. Did they try to shore up their offensive line? What did they do with the backup quarterback situation with Teddy Bridgewater? All this is going to take money, and there's only so much money to give. And so Mark Ingram ends up signing his deal, 3 years, $15 million. So the total amount of the deal, there's only $1 million difference. But the difference was is that Mark's getting more paid per year because he took a shorter deal with the Baltimore Ravens, who also, by the way, yesterday signing Earl Thomas, all-pro safety. But then came what we saw this morning. So they're up against it, right? With the free agency, only $9 million. They have no room to play with. All this other stuff. There's no way to do it. Well, this morning, the Saints have restructured Drew Brees' contract to clear $10.8 million in salary cap space. Brees is still due the $23 million in cash in 2019. What they'll essentially do is that the Saints, they created $10.8 million in cap space by restructuring Brees' deal this morning. But the bad news is that Brees' cap number for 2020 is going to be, wait for it, $41.3 million. So the Saints, Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland made the decision, we're going to be all in. We got one more year with Drew. Because there's no way in hell they're going to be able to afford to pay Drew Brees $41.3 million next year. Because guess what? Marshawn Lattimore, Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara, all those guys, they're going to get paid. Eli Apple, who you just traded for, he needs to get paid. You know, they have the benefit right now of having Alvin Kamara being a third-round draft pick. He's on a rookie contract for a third-round draft pick. Michael Thomas was a second-round draft pick. Marshawn Lattimore was a mid-round, first-round draft pick. These are very affordable team-friendly deals. They have needs. Obviously, tight end. Jared Cook, veteran guy who had a career year for the Raiders this past year. He's their number one target. They're trying to make sure he does not leave New Orleans. If we get an update on that today during the show, we will let you know. They also now have to deal with Teddy Bridgewater, who reports came out a few days ago. We reported it right here on this station, on these airwaves, that Bridgewater was going to be locked up. Oh, not so fast. Apparently, the Miami Dolphins are trying to make a huge push to get him into the door, because you remember, Teddy is from Miami. That's where he grew up. The Dolphins are his hometown team. and there's been conflicting reports. Teddy did take his visit. The Dolphins tweeted it out. It was an official visit. Does he sign? Apparently, the Dolphins are going to offer more money to Teddy. So it's going to be a decision for Bridgewater whether he wants more money or if he wants to come back and be the guy behind Drew Brees. But there's no telling how long that's going to be. How long is that going to take? Tom Brady's still playing at a advanced age and playing at an advanced level. So is Drew, even though there's a little mustard that's come off that fastball, so to speak. So, okay. So you make a wise decision. You free up more space. You're gonna get killed for it in 2020. Maybe you're thinking if you're the Saints, you're hoping that you can win a Super Bowl in 2019, and then Brees can retire, and then that cap hit is not as bad, and then you can just do your rebuild then. Okay. You're in win now mode. You feel like your window's closing. You got one more shot at this. You came so close, and you got robbed by the refs, and you need to do whatever it takes to get back there and to win that Super Bowl, right? And Drew Brees has restructured his contract. He's still going to get all his money now. And I'll say this. Drew Brees has never pulled a Tom Brady. Tom Brady took less money more than a few occasions with redoing his contract with the New England Patriots, so they were freed up to sign other guys. And that's benefited Tom Brady by being a multiple Super Bowl winner. He's won more Super Bowls than any person ever. Drew Brees never did that. Okay? Not to throw shade at Drew, but this is reality. Drew deserves every cent that the Saints throw his way. Once again, I ain't knocking a guy for wanting to get his money. You have a very small window as a professional athlete to get paid, especially in the NFL. But you know what this tells me? This tells me this narrative that they really wanted to have Mark Ingram come back was all BS. They had no desire whatsoever to bring Mark Ingram back to that team. None. They wanted to try to lowball him. And the whole narrative was, well, we only have so much money. And a day after Mark Ingram signs with another team, all of a sudden they've found money by restructuring Drew Brees' deal. That tells me that the front office of the New Orleans Saints did not give a damn about bringing Mark Ingram back, no matter how much he meant to his teammates and no matter how much he meant to the team and to the fan base. They did not care, because if they really cared about bringing Mark Ingram back, essentially less than $1 million difference between the contract he got from Baltimore and the one that they gave a guy with an injury history who's been a backup in Minnesota. Less than $1 million. They just freed up almost $11 million this morning. That couldn't have been done 2 days ago? Why all of a sudden now is it a priority?
Well, that's the thing. It obviously could have been done 2 days ago. So why? What would be the reasoning? And I know you don't, it's not like you have Sean Payton in your back pocket, but what would be a reasoning for choosing what seems to be at least choosing Latavius Murray over Mark Ingram?
I think they made a conscious decision to prioritize, and bringing back Mark Ingram was not a priority, Cody.
But if it's just $1 million or so difference, then they could have brought Mark Ingram back with this deal being done. See, I agree with what you're saying, that this kind of shows that the Saints front office wasn't too concerned about bringing Mark Ingram back, but not because of money. It seems to be more because of Mark Ingram. Because, I mean, if you're bringing in Latavius Murray, who's a very similar type of back,
they're the same age.
And yeah, exact same draft class, and you're paying him essentially the same amount of money, then why Mark Ingram why Latavius Murray? I think they
drew a hard line in the sand on how much money they wanted to spend, and I don't think they wanted to go a penny over it.
So you're saying that $1 million might have actually made a difference?
I think to them at that time. Now, could there be when last night came and gone, okay? And I think they're desperate to get a quality tight end in the building. Okay? I think they're desperate to be able to do that, Cody. And I think they were able to get Cook to come in for a visit. And they wanted to make damn sure that they could free up enough space to give him a contract that's going to have him leave New Orleans as a New Orleans Saints. Like, have him not leave the building without a contract. So maybe that's what they did and they felt desperate. They've only signed special team guys like Craig Robertson, Chris Banjo, Justin Hardy. You know, they got their kicker. They gave their kicker an extension for 5 years. You know, but having those special teams guys and locking up those special teams guys, that's great. That's a key to the season. But they had bigger needs. And I think also what played a role in this, Teddy Bridgewater going to Miami. I think they were desperate to line up Cook and try to secure him. Let's see if it works. And I think they're also desperate to have a backup quarterback. Because I'm going to tell you this. Reports came out last night that if Teddy Bridgewater does go to Miami, expect the Saints to sign Ryan Tannehill. Oh, hell no. Stop it. You mean the guy who was an average wide receiver at Texas A&M before becoming a quarterback? I've seen Ryan Tannehill play. No. Get me a McCown, brother. Dust one off, okay? Just go find me one. Is Steve DeBerg still available? He hasn't played in 20 years, but he's better than Ryan Tannehill.
I mean, Jake DeLome, right down the road, you'll find him.
Call up our good boy, big fave, Marlon Favorite. He will do a better job at quarterback as a backup quarterback for the Saints than Ryan Tannehill will.
I would do a better job. I charge less.
Far less.
Far less. Probably just, wouldn't do a better job.
Just either. A couple of vouchers to the Popeyes all-you-can-eat buffet. That'll take care of it. There it is. We got to go to a break. We'll talk more. We're going to touch on Will Wade. Oh, yeah. You know him. LSU men's basketball coach, maybe? Right here on The Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to The Rap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Coming up at 10:32, we'll have Brady Amon on for some old school wrestling talk. But I want to get to the statement that was released this morning to Sports Illustrated. In particular to Ross Dellinger, former LSU beat reporter for the Baton Rouge Advocate that now works for SI. So Will Wade decided to release an old statement on the eve, on the day prior to his team taking the court in the SEC tournament in Nashville. This is what the second-year head coach, who is indefinitely suspended for multiple media reports saying he is on wiretap conversations by the FBI, involved with a Christian Dawkins fella, who's a low-level, shady, wannabe agent, middleman runner for shoe companies. This morning, I advised President Alexander, Athletic Director Joe Oliva, and the LSU Board of Supervisors that I would like to resume my duties as head basketball coach. For some reason, he uppercased head basketball. I don't understand that. Continue. Last week, when the university decided to place me on administrative leave, I accepted the decision without complaint as I knew that they wanted time to reflect on the flurry of media reports. With the benefit of a week to consider the circumstances, I believe university officials should allow me to resume my duties. I understand that in today's hyper-intense media environment, it's our fault. You see, that's what he did there. It is extremely difficult for any organization, particularly a public university, to stand firm in the face of rumors, leaks, and innuendo. In this case, the simple truth is I've been placed on leave because I've exercised my right not to submit to a joint LSU-NCAA interview on the exact same subject matter at issue in an impending federal criminal trial in New York. My legal counsel advised the university. He keeps uppercasing university for some reason. That it would be wholly inappropriate for me or anyone to submit to an interview under these circumstances. Couple things there. Cody, you can chime in as well here as a diehard LSU fan. First of all, homeboy here ain't coaching LSU again. Let's just start that off right now. Releasing statements like this? No. The pettiness between him and the administration now You don't come back from this. This is not something that you hug it out and go, hey, it's great. It's not going to happen. He's definitely not going to be coaching.
Lest you forget, Jeff Jarrett is in the WWE Hall of Fame. Just saying. And that's real. And I know I brought up a wrestling thing, but Vince McMahon fired Jeff Jarrett on live television. And they have hugged and made up. So I'm just saying there are examples of extreme business relationships that have gone extremely sour that have, now granted, I guess there is a long extended period of time in between the falling out and the coming back together of Vince McMahon and Jeff Jarrett, but I'm just saying it can happen because bigger men can be men and put things aside if they choose to. Is it likely? Maybe not, but it can be done.
I don't remember Jeff Jarrett being involved in some type of FBI investigation during that storyline.
Well, no, but I'm just saying it's a similar fallout.
And bringing shame to the organization that he worked for?
He brought shame, just not from the FBI, just from poor wrestling and poor storyline ideas. I was trying not to make it about the wrestling.
Oh, but you did.
No, you did.
You did. You can't help yourself. That's why we love you.
I'm just saying if...
He ain't going to coach LSU.
Probably not.
I'm sorry. I'm going to sound country. He ain't going to coach LSU. It's just, he's not. Look. It's gotten to the point where he's making it worse. And this is, he's pulling a playbook from Bobby Knight. It doesn't get better. You're making it worse. He's making it worse. And look, I am not a Joe Oliva fan. I will say that right here on the radio. I think he's done a poor job. His track record as an athletic director has not been good. And that stems from his time at Duke handling the Duke lacrosse rape accusations. Okay? And how he's handled the Les Miles coaching situation. Okay? It's blunder after blunder, PR hit after PR hit. Okay? I'm not a Joe Oliva fan. But Will Wade's forced their hand here. He's forced the university's hand a couple ways. One being having conversations with a low-level scumbag wannabe agent that were on, ended up being wiretapped by the FBI. Don't hang out with shady people. That's the first one. Second thing, by refusing to talk to them about the situation, I understand legal counsel told him so. I get that. But what is the university supposed to do here? So he's forced their hand, and now he's like, well, I've informed them that I wanted to coach. Well, that's not how this works, bro. You can't, there's not one place that you can work at in this country where you could sit there and refuse to talk to your bosses about something and then expect to still be coming back to work on a daily basis. It just doesn't happen.
Tenure.
It just doesn't happen. So... statement from Will Wade, the LSU drama, and good for him by releasing the statement and causing his team to have even more of a distraction involved with them as they go to try to win the conference tournament. That's not being selfish at all. Bad look for Will Wade. He just keeps making it worse. I have to check in on the fake Will Wade account that tweets. That's amazing, by the way. When we come back, we'll talk about people that are, heels. Wrestling talk, old school wrestling talk coming up right here on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Old school wrestling talk with the tag team duo of RP3 and Brady.
Oh, hell yeah!
Ray is the former Demolition Fan Club president, Southeast Chapter. And the innovator of a devastating move called the Gator Lock. Brady is the 10-time Willow Street Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champion. And he once shook hands with One Man Gang. Time for some old school wrestling talk.
I wanted to plant a little fear. You see, Billy Red, if you plant grass, you grow grass. If you plant rice, you grow rice. I plant fear, and fear will grow.
When you play with a snake, you're going to get bit. That's just the way it is.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3 here on 103.7 The Game. It's time for some old school wrestling talk. We were supposed to do this particular segment, our favorite golden era wrestlers, 1985 to 1992, also known as the cartoon era in wrestling terms. Last week, we had set it up for that. After talking about the Honky Tonk Man's induction into the WWE Hall of Fame, we were going to talk about our favorite golden era wrestlers, but then the passing of King Kong Bundy occurred, and Brady and I decided to honor him instead last week. So now we're picking it up, the conversation, this week. We're going to head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline and welcome on my tag team partner, the one and only, the Port Barry legend himself, Brady Amon. Brady, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, Ray. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. So let's do some parameters here, okay? Talking about our favorite wrestlers from the Golden Era. Once again, let's go over some specifics. The Golden Era is particularly from 1985 to 1992. It's also known as the Cartoon Era, when wrestling really kind of took over everything. WrestleMania blew up, and then the WWF really blossomed with all its pay-per-views with SummerSlam, and then obviously Survivor Series was also done during that time period. Gave birth during that time period. So there's the holy, what I call the holy trinity of that era, and it's Hulk Hogan, it's Andre the Giant, and Randy Macho Man Savage. Today's conversation, our list will not consist of those three because, well, they're the holy trinity. So we're going to put the focus on some guys that were not those three. Are you okay with that decision that we have made, Brady?
Yes. Yeah, that's perfect for me because I think those three guys, while they embody the golden age, they also kind of transcended because Hulk Hogan was Hulk Hogan for a long time. So was Randy Savage. So was Andre the Giant. So those guys kind of, they're the three guys on the Mount Rushmore of that golden age. So you kind of just throw them off to the side.
Right.
They're already there.
So we're talking, and it's not necessarily maybe a little bit more of the second tier guys that developed during that era. And that's not to say that these guys couldn't have their career started beforehand. A lot of these guys came up through Mid-South and over in Dallas and whatnot in the late 70s. Guys like Junkyard Dog, King Kong Bundy, others, they came up, but they were also part of that golden era. And they, a lot of times, the discussion we're going to talk about today is our favorite guys from that era that weren't the marquee guys, weren't the Holy Trinity, so to speak. When you think of that era and you put those three aside, Brady, who springs to mind for you personally?
Well, I mean, I think when you talk about that era, I think that's kind of when gimmicks started. That's when we've had that, the show about the gimmicks and gimmick wrestlers. But I think that, kind of coincides with that era where you stop talking about wrestlers as, names and more of a gimmick. So I think of guys like Big Boss Man. I think of Legion of Doom, Hawk and Animal, the Road Warriors. I think of guys like Brutus Barber Beefcake, guys that had a gimmick, had a, without their props, they kind of would just be a normal wrestler. But because they had a gimmick, because they had some props, or because they wore a mask or wore paint or whatever, that's what I think of. I think of guys like that that kind of came to the ring and you knew instantly who they were because of the way they were dressed. Big Boss Man was, you knew who he was. There was no confusion about him. Same with Road Warriors. So that's what I think of. I think of guys like that. I don't think of the guys that kind of just wrestled as a name. I think of the more gimmicky type guys and that are known for their gimmick and that still to this day go around because of that gimmick. Go to all these Comic Cons or, wrestling events, and they are billed as, the Honky Tonk. They are billed as, Big Boss Man, guys like that. That's what I think of, at least.
During that time, it was also, even whether it was the technicians, the wrestlers that were technicians, everyone seemed to have a gimmick. Now, there was very few and far between that did not have a real gimmick. I mean, let's talk about Big John Studd, for example. Yeah. I mean, he's one of the giants of wrestling. He was 6'10". Okay, yeah. We know him because he was at the first WrestleMania in the body slam match with Andre the Giant. He also won the first Royal Rumble in 1989. He's part of that era. But Big John Studd didn't really have a gimmick. He was just a big guy with a beard and long hair that was 6'10". He was one of my favorite wrestlers, but he didn't have a gimmick like the Honky Tonk Man had or Jake the Snake Roberts had. He didn't have that. Even King Kong Bundy did not really have a gimmick. It was, hey, I'm in the big, he was a huge guy and he had personality, but he didn't have a gimmick. So how do you feel about those guys in that era in, quote-unquote, the cartoon era?
Well, I think they belong, I think Big John Studd, like you said, is kind of an example of a guy that was really well-known, but wasn't that main attraction. He wasn't an Andre the Giant or a Hulk Hogan, but yet at the same time, he was a guy that is synonymous with that era. And, him and King Kong Bundy are two guys that I think, even though they may have wrestled prior to the Golden Era, they are known for that time frame, 85 to 92, 93. And then they just both kind of just dropped off the face of the earth, or as far as wrestling is concerned, they just disappeared. Just guys that, there are others, that wrestled during that era. Undertaker's one that continued on and is still wrestling to this day. But then Big John Studd and King Kong Bundy are guys that examples of that was their heyday during that 8-year period. That's when they were popular. And then they kind of faded after that. And it's weird because they didn't really have a gimmick, so they could have kept going. But for whatever reason, they just didn't fit the new WWE. But I definitely put them in that category of those Golden Age guys, even though they didn't have that crazy gimmick like Honky Tonk Man. They just came to the ring and did their thing.
And a lot of the best wrestlers obviously are from that era, the Golden Era, and we talked about the Trinity. What do you do with Ultimate Warrior? Because obviously he epitomizes the cartoon era for better or for worse. And it was the whole gimmick from Parts Unknown, and he was this warrior, and he just spat gibberish and shook the ring. He's by far one of the worst technician big name wrestlers of all time. Like the wrestling is just that bad.
Tell me how you really feel, Ray.
It just was sloppy, man. It was for the Warrior. It was all the promo and running down to the ring and running around the ring. And other guys were great with promos. Macho Man was great with promos, but Macho Man was one of the best damn wrestlers you've ever seen. And that's what made him so special. I mean, Hogan was sloppy in a lot of ways, too. Hogan will even tell you, I wasn't the best wrestler. Warrior makes Hulk Hogan look like Ric Flair. Okay? So what do we do with Ultimate Warrior?
Well, Warrior, this is funny. Warrior, to me, is you put a Demolition Derby car in a NASCAR race. That's a perfect kind of analogy, because he's one of those guys that he's going to do it 150 miles per hour, even though it's really bad. But he did it very fast. I don't know. He's a Golden Age guy. I mean, really and truly, that's his. He's sort of like Big John Studd and King Kong Bundy in that that's the only time he was popular. Now, obviously, a lot of that had to do with the fact that he just got on Vince McMahon's bad side and a lot of guys' bad side, honestly. He's kind of a weird guy, went his own way. But, definitely one of those guys. I wouldn't put him on the top, in the top five of any of those things. I mean, when you talk about just crazy, if we're talking about crazy wrestlers that just kind of march their own drum, he's in that top five. You talk about ring entrances, he's in that top five. I just can't put him in that list of, when you talk about these other guys like King Kong Bundy and guys like that, even though I know he was so popular during that era, he's just not one of those guys, And the thing is, he's a Hall of Famer. There's no doubt about it. And he did a lot for wrestling back then, but I kind of put him in between Hulk Hogan, Macho Man Savage, those guys, and then the next level. So I think he kind of has his own category of maybe he was a trailblazer for being as weird and as bad as he was, but just still insanely popular.
I would agree with that. So, Brady, I want to expand this a little bit. Can we do a top 10? Yeah. We never do a top 10. Can you do a top 10?
Oh, I think I could put together a top 10, yeah.
Oh, here it is. Okay. So qualifier. The other guy that we don't mention in – we didn't mention in the Holy Trinity, and we should be – well, I don't mention him in the Holy Trinity because he's by himself. So this is our favorite Golden Era wrestlers, not named Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, Andre the Giant, and not Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I didn't mention Flair in the Holy Trinity because Flair is by himself.
Okay. Yeah, and Flair really, when I think of the Golden Era, I mean, I do think of Flair, but I think more of the WWE guys.
Correct.
Just because I think Flair, you know, he did his own thing in NWA and obviously was very popular there. He did have a run in WWE, but I don't think a lot of people remember him, not especially old school wrestling fans. They don't remember him for his WWE work. They really remember him for the NWA Four Horsemen type stuff. So, but he's definitely, he's up there with Hogan and those guys.
I'd agree with that. All right, brother, I'm going to let you go first.
Okay. All right. So, 10, huh? Man. I have a 5, but I could definitely do 10. All right. So, number 10, I'm going to go with one of my favorite wrestlers at the time. And I thought he was underappreciated, whatever. But make this quick. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. I loved the way he worked in the ring. I love that he was just kind of a really good fan favorite and just a really good technician in the ring. So, I liked him. Number 9 is a Mid-South guy that I'm going with his gimmick in WWE, and that's the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. I just love that gimmick. I love the fact that he thought he could buy everything. He thought he could buy his way into everything. I love that gimmick. I loved it. And the weird thing about that is he is the total opposite in real life. Very humble guy, loves the fans, all that thing. So Million Dollar Man is number 9. Number 8, Ravishing Rick Rude. I still see those god-awful pants that he wore to the ring with his face on the front. That was just disgustingly bad. But you had to appreciate Rick Rude. You had to appreciate how he'd come to the ring. He'd do a little gyration. You know, he'd do the little thing where he'd bring a lady up and kiss her. All that. That was just all part of his shtick, but you had to appreciate it at the time. Number 7, Jake the Snake Roberts. I thought that. As a character, he was a good one. We've always talked about his promos, some of the best promos in the business he did. And, obviously, you can't forget about Damien. I'm going to cheat a little bit. Number 6, I'm going with the Legion of Doom. So 6A, 6B, Hawk and Animal, the Road Warriors. One of my favorite tag teams from that era, just because they were so menacing and so scary, at least for me. I just appreciated them. I appreciated their energy. I appreciated their look about them with the big shoulder pads with spikes. I just thought it was, it was a really cool tag team to watch, even though I wasn't a big fan of theirs. I wasn't always rooting for them. I appreciate it. Number 5, in honor of today being my dad's birthday, I'm going to go with his favorite wrestler of all time, Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Just a guy that was a character. Exactly. Carried a 2x4 to the ring, carried a flag to the ring, very patriotic, was not the greatest wrestler, but was fun to watch. And the way he came to the ring and the way he just kind of, the big, you could see him sticking his big thumb up in the air. Just a big lumbering guy, but really fun to watch. Enjoy watching him. I enjoy watching my dad watch him. Number 4, we talked about him before, Honky Tonk Man. The personality, we talked about that and just how he was back in the day. Number 3, Big Boss Man. He was a guy that, had a gimmick, but was a really good wrestler at the end of the day. He was a guy that you really enjoyed watching. And he had some good feuds there with Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage. Number 2, Undertaker. I cheated a little bit because I went with Undertaker from that era. Not the new Undertaker, but the old Undertaker with the gray gloves, the kind of the pale face, the long trench coat. I really liked him. Number 1 might throw everybody for a surprise, but Brutus the Barber Beefcake. He was a guy that I really, really, really loved during that era. And I don't know why. I guess it was because how colorful he was. I mean, he was rocking the Billy Ray Cyrus mullet. And for whatever reason, he brought, pruning shears to the ring. He was a barber, but he brought pruning shears. I could never understand that. Why wouldn't he just bring, just a regular pair of scissors or maybe a razor? Or I just couldn't understand why he brought pruning shears. I don't know what he was planning on cutting. I have no idea. But Brutus the Barber Beefcake from that era was probably my favorite guy, the one that kind of stands out the most to me.
All right, now give it to me real quick. Just the names, 1 through 10 again, just to recap, Brady.
All right, so 10, we go on 10, is Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Number 9, Million Dollar Man. Number 8, Ravishing Rick Rude. Number 7, Jake the Snake Roberts. Number 6, Legion of Doom Road Warriors. Number 5, Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Number 4, Honky Tonk Man. Number 3, Big Boss Man. Number 2, Old School Undertaker. And number 1, Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
I love that list. We got some differences, though, so I'm going to give you my 10
all right,
quickly.
Good. All right, like you ready? That's what I want to hear. Yes, sir.
I actually put at 10 the Ultimate Warrior. I just, even though I clown him constantly, he was a big name, and I did enjoy watching his ridiculousness. So 10 for me is the Ultimate Warrior. Number 9 for me is an old school guy, Big John Studd. I was always a big fan of him growing up. Number 8, King Kong Bundy, another of those old school giants. I just love the old school giants. We'll have to do a big guy giant show.
I like that.
Number 7 for me was Ravishing Rick Rude. I absolutely loved him, and he just was the epitome of, like, the arrogant character of that era. He'd sit there and he would insult the guys in the audience. He'd insult the women, and then he'd try to pick up the women. He was the total bag, and you had to love him. He was a great heel. Number 6 for me was Jake the Snake Roberts. Loved the thing with Damian. Plus, he was a good wrestler, and I loved the DDT, even though it was a move that was a mistake that ended up being a finishing move. Number 5 for me, the Honky Tonk Man. We've talked about him here on the program before, going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. Number 4 for me, I had the Legion of Doom / the Road Warriors. I loved the whole thing. I was a big Mad Max guy anyway, and they kind of took that and ran with it. Loved that. Number 3 for me is the former prison guard of Cobb County. That's the one and only Big Boss Man. Loved the whole thing. And he was a guy that was a heel and a baby face all at the same time a lot of times. He feuded with the main card guys. He was never a main card guy, but he was always the kind of the thorn in their side, so to speak. Big Boss Man, number 3 for me. Number 2, it's Demolition. I mean, if you're talking Golden Era cartoon, no one encompasses that better than the tag team duo of Demolition, Axe, and Smash. And then you can add Crush later if you'd like. But number 1 for me, my favorite guy from that era that's not part of the Holy Trinity, and like I said, this is WWF guys, the golden era of WWF, 85 to 92, so that's why Flair's not part of this. And I could have went with The Undertaker, and I see what you did there, but most of his stuff came after that, even though he made his debut technically in that era. And I love Brutus the Barber Beefcake, who you mentioned as well. But number 1 for me, it was always the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. The whole shtick encompassed the 80s better than anything else that the company ever did. He was arrogant. He was rich. He tried to buy you off. And he was always in the mix. He was a good wrestler, too, which was the other thing.
Yes.
Underrated wrestler in a lot of ways. But terrific. So that's my top 10, brother.
Yeah, I like that list. I mean, I'm glad that we had a couple different, and then we, you know, obviously we had a few that were that kind of stand out from that era. But I agree, the Million Dollar Man was a good gimmick, and that's something that, think about it, they couldn't do that today. I don't think that would fly over, especially the Virgil part.
Oh, the Big Boss Man wouldn't fly over. Yeah,
that would not work today in today's climate. But yeah, at the time, I mean, he was, you know, and the cool thing about that is when you talk about the polar opposite of the character. That's how he was in real life. He was the absolute polar opposite of the Million Dollar Man. Very, very humble in real life and very, very accommodating and nice. So it's kind of cool when you see that kind of crossover where a guy actually plays something completely opposite of how he is in real life.
Brady, as always, brother, it's a pleasure. Had a terrific time doing this. And we'll talk next week, my friend.
That sounds great. Looking forward to it, man.
Brady Amon. Old School Wrestling Talks in the books. This edition of the Rap Game is almost in the books. We'll put a bow on it after this break right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3 here on 103.7 The Game. Reminder, today, Jim Rome Show's coming up next. After that, the Jordy Holberg Show with Jordy Holberg. Our good brother, Ben Love, Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the tap room at River Ranch, because it's Thursday, and that's where he's going to be at. Check in tomorrow with us here on the Rap Game because I'll be broadcasting live from Nashville, Tennessee. That's right. I'll be there for the SEC tournament. We'll be an extra half hour tomorrow, 9 to 11:28, ladies and gentlemen. Got a jam-packed show for you. Plenty of guests. A lot of LSU talk. A lot of SEC tournament talk, so make sure to tune in for that. I want to thank Brady Amon for coming on today. Y'all be safe out there, and we'll talk to you tomorrow right here on 103.7 The Game.